This is Jerry Bain for EduCollege Review Online, and I'm joined in conversation today with George Siemens, Associate Director for the Technology Enhanced Knowledge Research Institute at Athabasca University. He's also an educator and researcher on learning, networks, analytics, openness, and more. George, I'd like to start our conversation by asking what larger trends MOOCs point to in higher education.
Broadly speaking, my view would be that MOOCs are less of a specific thing than they are a reflection of a series of trends and a way that educators are starting to think of what those trends might be. On one level, MOOCs represent the internet just happening to education, right? It's the sense that now higher education is facing some of the same technological pressures that other industries have faced. But there are deeper trends underlying that. It's not such a simple narrative because we're looking at reduction in state funding for higher education. We're looking at concerns about increased tuition. And we're also looking at just the way that information is developed in digital ages, which means that people can create, share, and distribute information. In some level, they can organize without an organizer. And that, I think, all reflects this variety of change pressures. So as of now, MOOCs, the pattern that they currently represent, which is a response to fairly seismic shifts educationally, I think that's going to be ongoing.
Well, could you talk a little bit about the complexification of higher education and the role MOOCs play in that? Because I know you talked a little bit about sort of this demand for education that isn't being met by higher ed institutions. So there's this sort of shadow education, you know, things like the Khan Academy. Do you want to talk about that?
One of the ways that MOOCs have been positioned is against higher education in the sense that MOOCs are going to replace the university. And there have been a few MOOC providers that have used terminology or language to indicate that that's what they'd like to see happen, or at least that's part of what their goal is. And there's no shortage of folks in popular media that are advocating for MOOCs as this tremendous new shift or transition educationally. And usually the narrative is somehow focused on tuition. The flip side of the tuition narrative is that's often overlooked is the fact that the reason we have high tuition is because we've had long periods of reduction of state funding in many education systems. You know, there are many parts of the world where tuition is not the driving force that it is in the American education system. But broadly speaking, the complexification of education, when I use that term, I'm referring to just this variety of patterns around employment and work opportunities that individuals face. So, for example, right now in the U.S., about half, less than half, of students are now traditional full-time students. The majority of students now fit into what we would possibly look at as a non-traditional student profile. They might be working, they might be doing part-time studies, they might be commuting and, you know, off campus and taking less than a full-time course load and so on. So historically, if we educated 10% of the workforce or 10% of society, you had a certain type of student that would fit into that model. Typically, they would be the higher achieving students, the ones that are more motivated. But once you start having completion agendas initiated and you approach 20, 30, 40, 50% of people in society participating in higher education, suddenly you need to provide different levels of support because your student profile is now not as homogenous as it might have been in the past. Especially when you have systems that are starting to advocate, how do we address the poverty cycle through education? One of the biggest determinants of higher education completion is actually income. So if you're in the bottom quartile of the economic structure of society, chances are you will not get a degree. So how do we address that as a way to break the poverty cycle? And again, these are issues. If you're the first student completing a degree in your family, you're going solo. You don't have a lot of the support structures that someone else might where there's a family member with a bachelor's or a master's. So the complexification of education really refers to the fact that we're now in a knowledge economy where we're continually learning, and we've heard that for a long time, but it really is a reality. Secondly, we're educating a broader spectrum of society, which means different learning needs are required and different teaching and learning approaches are required. And as a whole, I think the education pie, if you will, is just growing larger. And that in turn is producing some interesting opportunities for universities to respond to. And to date, they really haven't. They focus on the traditional student sector, even though that is no longer the majority.
Do MOOCs disenfranchise or empower faculty?
You know, that's a very interesting question because I think it depends entirely on the faculty. So let's say if you look at the response that folks have in the teaching of MOOCs, if you've taught a MOOC, the language I've heard from faculty has been almost exclusively positive. Now, I'd love to hear a critique from, I mean, we've had lots of critiques from MOOC takers where they say, I didn't like this, I didn't like that, I dropped out. But from faculty who've actually taught a MOOC, the response I've heard is overwhelmingly positive. And what I find interesting is that the response quite often is in terms of personal transformation. It's helped the faculty member see that, you know, what is teaching like in a digital age? What is the value of teaching in networks? The ability to have groups of learners teach one another rather than a centralized faculty member as guru pedagogical model. And so that's been, I think, a fairly significant response from those that have taught a MOOC. For other faculty who haven't taught one and perhaps don't have any interest in teaching one, that I think might move toward the disenfranchisement scale that you provided. And I think that's because there's a variety of real concerns that exist. You know, will MOOCs threaten the professorate? Will there be a reduction? I mean, right now in most systems, faculty or human resource expenses are the largest part of the university expense model. And so when you're looking at cutting costs, that likely will be one area, the human resources cost will likely be one area that senior administrators or state officials will consider as they look at the funding or the tuition concerns in higher education. So I think there is a possibility that faculty members will be impacted. But by the other side of it, if you look at recent results with the Udacity concerns with San Jose State University, that ended up suggesting that, well, maybe we're jumping well ahead of ourselves in this view of self-regulated learners go at their own pace, do what they want. There needs to be a development of skills around self-regulation before you can make a self-regulated learner. What was interesting that's somewhat been ignored by the press is that the edX partnership that San Jose State has actually produced, and that was in a blended learning approach, actually produced significantly better results than in-class-only instruction. So on the one hand, the Udacity partnership sounds like it wasn't as successful as they had hoped. But the flip side, namely the edX partnership having been more successful, is actually quite a bit better. So anyway, there's a few things to think about in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think will be the sort of outcome in 5-7 years from this MOOC hype? What are the promises of the MOOC that you think will flower into other advantages for the student, for higher education in general?
Well, at some level, I think MOOCs are a response to the lack of experimentation in higher education around digital learning. You know, there were some early attempts with Fathom and other initiatives to really ramp up higher education opportunities that digital opportunities or online learning. Now, unfortunately, at that stage, the technology wasn't there. The literacy to participate in online learning wasn't there on the part of many learners, the bandwidth, and the list goes on. So that didn't turn out quite as well as they had hoped. But any kind of failure in the space of experimentation still produces some capacity. So you have systems, let's say, like Penn State that have been very active in the online learning space for quite a long time. And as a result of their high level of activity, they actually enter the space of teaching MOOCs, as they're doing now with Coursera, with a very strong learning design focus. They invest significant effort in the experience of students, and they take a team-based approach with the faculty experts and learning designers to try and flesh out their particular course content or their course activities. So that end, I think MOOCs will, at minimum, produce a level of capacity. Even where the initiatives fail, they'll provide some insight and understanding on the part of faculty that have taught them or part of systems that have tried to offer them. What's the long-term impact? I would hope that they would be seen in the future, you know, let's say a decade down the road, as having been sort of an opportunity for universities to start taking seriously learning in digital environments. The research evidence is amply clear that learning at a distance or learning online in many subject areas is comparable and produces comparable outcomes to learning in a classroom setting. Now, ideally, and the U.S. Department of Education report from about a year and a half ago validated this as well, ideally a blended learning model is preferred because it gets the best of both spaces. But at minimum, the reality is that research indicates that the technological orientation of a course isn't necessarily the key criteria in student success. So if you teach it online or teach it in a classroom, design and learner support and a variety of other factors play a greater role than necessarily the medium itself, even though the medium isn't 100% neutral. And so that was the mindset, and many folks in online or distance education fields already knew that this was the value of this space. However, when big companies or big universities like Coursera and edX get on, all of a sudden you have a huge increase in the recognition and acceptance of learning online. So I think the biggest benefit from MOOCs in the future may well be that suddenly online learning is taken seriously by a sector of society that in the past wasn't considering the research evidence for it.
What do you think about the low cost and sort of global access aspect of it? Do you think that it's going to democratize education to a certain degree, or do you think that's sort of a pipe dream?
At this point, it's a bit of a pipe dream. I mean, MOOCs, they'll democratize access to learning opportunities, but not necessarily quality learning experiences. Learning is a significantly social process. There is a lot of research that validates the important influence of a faculty member in assisting or mentoring students' development within a particular field. So to say that MOOCs will replace education, higher education as we know it today, I mean, that in my eyes is just not going to happen. There are too many complex social factors at play in learning that MOOCs to date aren't able to replicate. If suddenly we have massive breakthroughs in machine learning and artificial intelligence, and we have a fully socialized digital mentor that isn't a human being, but an algorithm that sits and guides us and encourages us, well, then I might take that back. But I don't see that happening in the near future.
Right.
So for the time being, I would say very much what we will see going forward with MOOCs is that there will be greater opportunities for learners from different parts of the world to access some of the best thinkers in the world. And those learners, in turn, will be given scholarships or learning opportunities or whatever it might be, likely leading to physical campus learning as well, just because of the huge value that the social dimension still has in the learning process. But again, the issue here is that the internet in some ways democratized access to information. And with MOOCs, we might see the democratization of access to knowledge or even access to learning opportunities. But the whole process of learning, from the creation of content to the social interactions to the mentorship and support to the validation and accreditation, all of these elements aren't addressed as concisely in MOOCs today as proponents would have you believe that they are. So we need to move in a lot of directions before we can say that MOOCs will democratize education.
I've got one last question, then I'll let you go. You mentioned in a blog entry recently that sort of 2014 will be the year of backlash for MOOCs. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, I think I was referring almost more so to 2013, because, you know, sort of the year of the anti-MOOC. And I think we're well on our way already, because there's a lot of criticism coming out against, you know, or about MOOCs as a whole. And there's a good reason for it. Almost every MOOC initiative that was launched in 2012 was done so without involvement of a key stakeholder, namely faculty. And as a result, the initiatives that launched MOOCs didn't consider things such as faculty IP. They didn't consider the faculty oversight of MOOC initiatives. They didn't consider some of the angst in higher education and even in society about privatization of education. And so for a variety of factors and reasons, I guess, these MOOC initiatives were launched largely ignoring the role of the professorate in this space. Now that faculty are waking up to some of the limitations of this format or of MOOCs as a whole, suddenly there is a growing amount of interest in this, and that's really driving some of that negativity, because we're seeing a critical eye. And in fairness, 2012 was overhyped. I mean, MOOCs were going to do everything for us. You know, they're going to solve global warming, yeah. Make our bacon and bake our bread, and all of a sudden,
right, totally.
People are saying, wait a second, you know, nothing is all good. What are some of the negative elements here? What kinds of things do we want to think about that we have been overlooking? How do we deal with the social experience of learners? How to deal with at-risk learners? How do we deal with the role of a faculty member and the research component? You can't just leech off of a system in the form of offering MOOCs long-term while ignoring research. Eventually you end up without advancing knowledge in that particular space. So those are the kinds of things that are now being considered. And I think it's very valuable that they're waking up to it. I personally would have loved to have seen faculty members wake up last year sometime. But anyway, in many ways, I'm happy to see that criticism. Unfortunately, that criticism is going to the extreme now. So just like the MOOC proponents, the MOOC hypers last year were vastly overstating what MOOCs were going to do, this year, there seems to be an emergence of massive dismissal of what MOOCs can do. And that's noted with the almost gleeful response to the shortcomings of the Udacity San Jose State University MOOC. There's more to it. There's less to it than the hype we had, and there's more to it than the dismissal we're seeing now.
Well, thank you so much for your time, George. I really appreciate you talking to me.
A pleasure chatting. Take care.